It's time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being with us.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
So let's talk about last Friday. There was a storm that came through. It came through the Grand Rapids area as well, but I know in northeastern Minnesota it really hit. What'd you find out about it?
Yeah, well, I did talk to the National Weather Service, and this was a very powerful storm. In fact, it's one of those storms that they determined is a derecho, which is a term for a storm that is not only powerful but also covers a large area and is long-lasting in terms that it covers a wide area. Often these types of storms can cover many states. And this is the kind of storm we had back in 1999 when we had that huge blowdown across the boundary waters. This wasn't quite as severe as that, but in pockets up around the Lake Vermilion area, the Eagle's Nest area, and around Ely, there was extensive damage to trees, to outbuildings. Some homes were damaged, vehicles were damaged by falling trees and things like that. There was widespread power outages in our area. We had about 7,000 customers without power. Pretty much everybody on Lake Vermilion and rural Ely, places like that, were without power in the wake of the storm. It took until Monday evening for everybody to get their power back. And then, of course, we had a few more storms over the course of the week, and there were more outages. So it's been kind of a frustrating week for folks up in our area, just with the power outages and whatnot, and just cleanup. There's certainly been a lot of that to do. And actually, one of the saddest elements of this, of course, was that a 33-year-old lineman who'd been living in Cook, he died on Friday evening. He was out with the Lake Country Power crew and just collapsed about 6 p.m., and they're not sure at this point, I guess, exactly what the cause of death was, at least as of yesterday when we went to press. We'll be following up on that later. I know they were doing an autopsy because initially the sheriff's office had indicated electrocution, but then they walked that back. Apparently there wasn't really any evidence that that was the case. So they are still waiting to have an official cause of death released on that individual. And that was, his name was Drew Schwartz, and he was living in Cook. It was from kind of central Minnesota, I believe, originally. So that was the sad aspect of this storm.
Can we expect more of these big storms like this? What did the National Weather Service have to say about that?
Well, in the immediate future, actually, Carol Christensen, a meteorologist down there in Duluth, said we can expect some very nice weather for the next few days. And, we had a strong cold front come through on Thursday. I'm sure folks probably noticed the change in the weather, that nice brisk northwest wind and, much lower dew points and cooler temperatures, which just felt great. And we're supposed to have that to continue through the weekend, which is probably a good thing because there's a lot of blueberries out in the woods to pick now. They're starting to get ripe, and it's looking like it's going to be a bumper crop. So hopefully we can dry things out a little bit and maybe get the mosquitoes a little bit under control.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to another story you've been covering. The U.S. Justice Department has an investigation into Glencore. That's a Swiss company. How does it relate to northeastern Minnesota?
Yes, well, that would be an obvious question, except for the fact that Glencore is kind of the primary backer for the PolyMet proposed copper-nickel mine near Hoyt Lakes. And the company is the largest single shareholder. They own about a third of PolyMet, and they have board representation, and they have provided almost all of the capital that PolyMet has needed for its project development. Obviously, if Glencore is facing investigation and who knows what the outcome will be, if there, could possibly be sanctions on the company, it's not clear how that might affect, the PolyMet project. Lots unknown at this point, but the Department of Justice is looking into the company and has requested a significant amount of documents dating from 2007 to the present, and they're looking for violations of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act as well as U.S. money laundering laws, mostly stemming from its acquisitions of mining properties in Nigeria and also in the Congo, as well as Venezuela. The company's kind of had a reputation for being pretty aggressive in its tactics, especially in some of these third world countries where they've kind of dealt with some folks that have not always been seen, by most companies as on the up and up. And that's kind of how they've gotten themselves in trouble here. Apparently they had a relationship in acquiring some mine property in the Congo that involved an Israeli businessman who had a very close friendship with the president of the Congo, and apparently some of these assets were sold for, you know, pennies on the dollar, and then there must have been some kind of a kickback arrangement. It'll be interesting to see what develops in this investigation, and we don't know at this point how long the investigation might last, but, you know, certainly it does put a bit of a cloud over the company and potentially over anything they're involved with here in the U.S.
All right, let's move on to another story. You've been looking into the big debate over Muskie. Some people love him, some people do not. What'd you find out?
Yeah, well, I talked to a number of folks, actually, for this story. But it was kind of some Lake Vermilion resort owners who had kind of reached out to express their concerns about the issue. They're worried that the push that's been kind of building momentum around the state to try to limit or eliminate muskie stocking in Minnesota lakes, you know, could impact the muskie fishery here on Lake Vermilion as well as their business. You know, muskie in a lot of our bigger lakes, and Vermilion certainly one of them, has become a pretty important aspect of our fishery. For resorts here, especially on Vermilion, it's really extended their season, in many cases by a couple of months. You know, traditionally, a lot of the walleye fishermen, you know, tended to kind of wrap things up around Labor Day, got pretty quiet on the lake. But now, since the muskies have really taken off, you know, that season now extends almost right up to freeze-up. You know, that's actually the best time of year, is kind of fall, late fall, October, even early November now. You've got anglers out there working hard to pick up these monster muskies which are out there. And so that's, you know, for the resorts who are catering to those fishermen, that's been a boon to their business, you know, at a time when normally they don't have anybody around. So they want to make sure that continues, and they're very concerned about this push. You know, and of course, you know, some of the concerns about muskies are, you know, that they impact the walleye fishery. A lot of folks also I hear from all the time on Lake Vermilion, you know, they're concerned that they're eating ducklings and loon chicks and things like that. And they probably are, you know, as well as eagles and other things like that. I mean, there's plenty of predators out there that'll take advantage of young birds. And I'm sure muskies are one of them. You know, I did talk to Edie Everett. She's the Tower Area Fisheries Manager. And she said there's no evidence that they impact the walleye population, which is the biggest concern that she typically hears from people, is that, you know, muskies eat a lot of walleye. It turns out, she said, that they do eat walleye. They eat just about anything that they can swallow. But in most cases, they tend to focus on whitefish and ciscos, which are oily and which really help the muskie put on weight. You know, so sure, they're eating walleye, but big walleye eat little walleye too. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of the way it is with the aquatic food chain. And muskies, they're right at the top of that food chain. And one of the other issues, too, I guess, is that some of the resort owners are a little concerned now that the muskie have gotten too smart, and they're tougher to catch now. And that is an issue, according to Edie Everett. She said that, you know, a lot of these big muskie especially, you know, they've been in the lake for, you know, many years now and have probably been caught more than once. And over time, I mean, they may be fish, but they're not stupid. They do learn over time that, you know, the difference between something they really want to eat and that attractive lure. She said they do get harder to catch over time, and that's something that some of the fishermen have noticed as well. They like to target, I guess, what the DNR calls naive fish.
Okay.
And there just aren't enough of them right now to keep some of these anglers happy. So that's been kind of an impact as well. And so they like to have continuous stocking, so there's still more of these younger fish that, you know, are still coming up and still trying to figure things out and are easier to catch.
Wow. And might pay attention to your fancy new lure.
Exactly. You know, it was interesting because, you know, I hadn't paid that much attention to this whole muskie debate, but once you start talking about it, there's a lot of different aspects to it.
Yeah.
And it really is an important component of the resort business, you know, on lakes like Vermilion, and I'm sure Leech and Winnie, and, you know, those big muskie lakes, I'm sure it's a big deal for them.
Well, Marshall, before we go, it's the 4th of July week. It was kind of strange to have it in the middle of the week. How did things go up in your area?
Well, pretty good. I think most people kind of like that middle of the week in a way, because either people took a couple days off ahead of it or after it, or in some cases, you know, both ahead and after, and got the whole week off. So I think it probably worked out pretty well for folks. And we were worried about the weather. You know, there was a lot of talk about, you know, big rain storms coming in right about parade time, but it turned out they hit a little bit ahead of the parades. And so we were able to get all the parades in up in Ely and Tower rain-free. So that was a good thing.
But not the race.
Not the race. No, we do the Vermilion Run here in Tower for the 4th of July. And, yeah, we got absolutely soaked. So that we'll have to prepare for that possibility next year. This is the first year we've ever had rain for the race, so I think it kind of caught us off guard.
Yeah. Marshall, we'll check in with you next week. Thanks.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi.
Marshall Hellenberger, the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show.